Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Josh Brown, they're making a Tekken anime.
I know you're going to be unbelievably excited for this. I knew before I even knew that was a thing.
Yeah.
I could feel the vibrations in the air. I could feel it was just good vibes coming from you, Scott.
Good Amazing. Vibrations. The thing is, this is the wind-up. Usually we go back and forward on a certain topic. Maybe there's something that we don't agree on, which we'll see by the time we hit credits on Elden Ring, where we both come down on it. That'll be a topic primed for a Monday's wind-up. But the other version of the wind-up is just getting people ready for the gaming week, wrapping up all sorts of different stories, all sorts of different wider talking points, you know, try and take as many things into the fold as possible. And one thing that broke yesterday was Tekken Bloodline, Netflix's next animation, looking like the Tekken version of the Mortal Kombat Scorpion's Revenge animation, or maybe the Battle of the Realms animation that was put together by whatever the hell the studio is that did the thing for NetherRealm. I love all animated things, and I got you to watch the Tekken trailer so we can talk about this. We've got a whole bunch of other stuff too. But what was your thoughts on the old Bloodline?
It looked like a really good trailer, I'll tell you that. As we talked about off mic, and as we'll talk about on mic, animation is not necessarily my forte. It's not that I hate it or anything like that. It's just that of the ones I've watched, and this is, I know animation as a genre, as an industry, as a medium is so huge. So I might not have just found the one that appeals to me. I just haven't found the one that's clicked on it. I need to devour every single part of this level. But with that said, as a kind of novice when it comes to this realm, I watched this trailer and I thought, that looks bloody good.
Do you think you'll actually be watching it?
No.
The thing is, I said to you before, because I think it's like a whole thing in film discourse, in film awards and whatever, where I feel like animation just gets snubbed. It's sort of like there are tons of incredible animated movies, TV shows, whatever, that just never get their due. Like if you talk about like in the video game space, you talk about video game adaptations, the Castlevania series is massively up there. I think that's the closest that something's gotten to a lot of people talking about it. And when the last final season wrapped up, you know, it's getting a spin-off now, and it was like, it had like a nice positive conversation around it. But there's a lot of other stuff out there. There's the Devil May Cry anime from a good few years ago, but there's the Dota anime, there's Dragon's Dogma. Like there are multiple things that Netflix have picked up and ran with, and they made the watching Tekken and looking at the amount of like impact that the different hits have and the different ways that they show martial arts, I think this is just how you do video game adaptations. For me, anime or animation in general gets you closer to how over the top the action needs to be in a way that live action stuff just doesn't. And I was just thinking, if you made a Halo animation, I would take that in a heartbeat over the horrible, sterile toss that is the Paramount Plus thing.
It's funny that, because obviously they're completely different mediums, completely different styles and such, but if I was watching a Halo TV show, animated TV show, for instance, or even an animated movie, I would be thinking, I would rather play this in a way that I wouldn't necessarily when it's in live action. Because when it's live action, you're working with a different set of limitations. Obviously, you kind of are with animation, but you're working within the same realm of, if you can imagine it, you can more or less visualize that in a way that you can't with live action, because you have props, you have CG, all of that stuff. It's difficult. And for me, I always like to see how it's translated with, you know, human actors and you know, actual props and stuff like that. It's funny because I wish I was on the animation train. Like
train.
It brings me no joy to be that guy who's like, I just don't get animated stuff. I just don't like it. But unfortunately, it just doesn't click with me in the same way that I want it to.
My one recommendation to you, and please, other people send in good faith recommendations, is Castlevania. I still would love you to watch the first episode of Castlevania and see what you think.
I told you this morning, but with Castlevania, right? I'm sure it's great. Everyone says. It's awesome.
It's so cool.
But it's the issue of, right, I watch so few TV shows. Mm. I find them such a time sink that I need to know I'm going to love it. So anyone recommending me a TV show in general, right, is fighting an uphill battle. When you add animation on top of that, in it being an animated TV show, it's like your chances of me watching that are in the single-digit percentages. And it sucks because I'm sure it's great. Everyone talks about how bloody good Castlevania is.
I know. You will love it. You'll love every four seasons of it. It's brilliant, and it's so good. And the first seasons are like four or five episodes long.
Yeah.
20 minutes a piece. You can be through that.
Well, this is it. You know what? Oh, the thing is, man, I'll enjoy Tekken through you. And I think I'm all right with that. I'll enjoy it through the discourse you send my way, through the clips that I see on social media.
You have little choice in the matter, considering how much I'll be consumed by this when it first drops.
It's funny what you mentioned there, though, about like the differences between live action and animation. Mm. You saying that, you know, animation is king when it comes to video game adaptations.
Yes.
The Mortal Kombat movie, right? I know
it was one of the worst things I've ever seen.
Scorpion's Revenge.
Oh, that one's great. The live action one can get in my bum.
Well, I was going to that next because I thought it was all right. I thought it was quite good. It had a pretty bad story, right?
Yep. But and they broke the law.
Oh, I didn't care for that. I didn't mind that.
I did.
I know you did. I know you're someone who gets really wound up about
that. I hate
it. But when it came to, you know, the first 5 minutes, I think we can agree, the first 5 minutes, right, you've got, it's Scorpion versus Sub-Zero, right?
Mm-hmm. Back in old Edo Japan.
Yeah, like that is awesome. That's a great short movie. And I think that if they get another go and they can sustain that for a full movie, I think you got something special there, you know? There's something special in that live action adaptation, I think, that could be extrapolated into a really, really good movie.
For me, anything live action is only going to try and catch up to the games. Like, it's like the sense of motion. If you talk about Mortal Kombat, the fatalities, there's like literal animations, the portrayal of violence, the kineticism that's in the way that those fights play out. A live action version just can't get there. Like, the nearest you'll get is... Like, you potentially get close with, like, really good choreography, but in terms of the games, MK10 and 11 especially have incredible fight choreography in themselves, you know, backed up by the character models that are then applied to the motion capture actors doing those fight scenes in those cutscenes, and that's before you get to the actual bits that you play yourself. So for me, a nearer analog would be animation, but you can go... if you watch Castlevania or just whatever, you watch all sorts of anime, the way that they can, like... really emphasize impact or combat or like visual spectacle. There's just so much you can do in animation and anime that lines up with visual spectacle and memorability in a video game that I think live action struggles to hit.
I wish I knew what didn't click with me, man. I've tried lots of things. You know, obviously you were a big, maybe still are, a big Rick and Morty fan.
Yes.
And I know that's a completely different realm from the Tekken
watch
thing.
Smiling Friends, carry on.
But it's like, I tried to get into Rick and Morty and I gave that a couple of seasons and it was okay. And I was like, this is fine. You know, I tried to get into Adventure Time when that was a big thing. And I thought, this is okay, this is fine. It's not like that. I think that all of these things are bad. It's not like I think animation is bad. It's just for whatever reason. And I want people to... you know, try to message me about this because I want to know whether you're on my side or on Scott's side. Not that you should take sides, but I just want to know if it's just me being a freak weirdo or what, because I feel like I'm missing out on this entire lovely realm that
into. You are missing out. It's brilliant. Castlevania is brilliant. The thing is, though, this is a vested conversation. This is this long-form thing where animation doesn't get its due, and that's why, like, we talked about this before we started recording, but I'm fascinated by that. Like, why won't more people give it a shot? Why isn't it the held up more? I don't get it. When it's so, like, to me, it's so visual, it's so obvious why you would check those things out. And it isn't like towards you, but in general, like in terms of film awards and whatever, I'm like, look at this thing. Like, I know Beauty and the Beast was the first you know, Disney movie, whatever, to sort of get that wider recognition, but overall it does seem to get knocked back a bit. And so yeah, in regards to Tekken, there is 1998 or 1997 other Tekken anime that they did back in the day that has a very old school animated look that didn't review very well at all. There's a live action one from like 2012-ish.
I've seen that one.
No, what? Have
I
you?
I have seen it twice.
Why?
I had a sickness.
I bet you watched Dead or Alive live action.
I certainly have.
There he
friend.
Is.
Well,
there
this is the is. Thing. This is why I know I'm wrong. Because I will watch these guff live action adaptations just because I want to waste my life. You know what I mean? But I won't watch the good ones, the good animated ones, and I don't know why, because that Tekken live action, there's two, you know? Maybe even more, I don't know, I stopped counting. But that first one, blew. It was sucked.
Did you watch Street Fighter, The Legend of Chun-Li?
You know what? I saw clips of it. Brilliant. I saw clips of it, but I didn't.
Christian Quirk.
But that's because Street Fighter is not my stuff. You know, right? Okay. Tekken is my thing. So
I can't believe
that.
This. I'll do some sort of. I need to ask the world this. I need a tweet poll to ask where the world comes down on this, because that's how I ask the world thing.
My when I was replying to your tweet poll the other day on Souls on
letting the world know we're referring to this genre as Souls games going forward. It's not Soulsborne. It's not Soulsborne Kiro. It's not Dark Souls games. It's Souls games. That won by 1%.
Well, when I saw that, when I was partaking in it, because you know when I chose one, I feel like I clinched that for Souls games. My partner was looking over and she went, "Scott loves a good tweet poll, doesn't he?"
Yeah, he does.
And I was like, "Yeah, he does.
I love
him,
man." If I want to ask, I want to get the general read of a room.
Yeah,
I want to. That's the biggest room there is that I have access to.
I love it.
I want to know whether I think I asked people whether they have a bin in their living room.
You did.
I did, and I think most people said, "What do you mean? I've never thought of that." And then they started putting bins in the living room.
It's great. So, it's an insight into what we talk about in the office, because almost everything spins off into a getting the definitive poll on Twitter. Yes. It's like, do you have a bin in your living room? Then we all go, "Scott, that's mental."
It's not. It's really handy. I'm not saying fill it full of food waste, but if I've got a bit of scrumped up paper, I'm not going to the kitchen with that. I'll put it in the bin, mate.
Scott, man, it's 2022. We must paper.
Would you, anything, a bill? I don't know.
The Bill of Rights.
Whatever you need to get rid of, I'm not getting up to get rid of it. I'm reaching over the couch and I'm putting that in the bin.
That's fair.
That's the way you're supposed to live. Tekken, though.
What's that?
What even is that? What's a bloodline? No idea. Never heard of it. But that thing is coming later this year. And overall, I think it looks really promising. I didn't even talk about what I think about it. Yeah, I think it looks really cool.
Yeah.
I like the fact that how clean it looks. It kind of reminded me of like a Studio Ghibli take on Tekken.
Right.
Just in terms of the color palette and the way that it moves and everything.
Obviously, I don't necessarily have the frame of reference, but I thought the kind of the colors on it, in like the backgrounds especially, kind of had a sort of faded, not necessarily retro look, but it kind of reminded me of stuff that I watched when I was younger, perhaps, or something. I don't know whether that's true.
Yeah, like
maybe it was just my display on my computer.
No, no, I think there was like a painterly look to it. Mm-hmm. How long are we? Look, we are 10 minutes in.
Wow.
On Tekken, but also they do at one point show a camera rotating around Jin when he's facing off against Jun at the very beginning of the trailer, or the teaser, which looks like it's rendered in 3D and then actually displayed in 2D, which is an interesting thing, that I've started seeing in some other places. The Dragon Ball FighterZ game had that, the Guilty Gear series has that, where everything is actually rendered in 3D, but it stays 2D.
Yeah.
But maybe they're going to do some cool stuff where the camera starts spinning around people and you realize it's in 3D all along, or whatever. The Dragon's Dogma adaptation on Netflix was done in 3D as well, which looked weird, to be honest. There's a way to do it well and a way to do it that looks weird.
It looked really neat, and I thought it was cool how he blended, this more unique visual style compared to the games, with kind of game signifiers, like for instance when the hits were connecting, like the flourishes, and the impact was more or less,
well, people noticed, like
inspired by the games,
like Heihachi's combo he does on Jin when he finally goes to ask how to be taught the Mishima style or whatever, he does the 1-1-2 square square triangle punch.
Oh, nice.
And it does the same glow of fighting effect, and it's like people notice that when characters are blocking, there's blue that comes off them as well, which is just like in the games. That led to most of my Sunday being Tekken 7, whereas it should have been probably something that was newer than a few years ago.
I'll tell you this.
Go on.
I'll tell you this right now.
For free.
I couldn't get into Tekken 7.
Really?
I was a huge, huge Tekken fan back in the day. And when you graciously gifted me Mortal Kombat 11, and I had a fighting game binge after I played that, and I just wanted more. I bought Tekken 7.
Right.
Couldn't get into it. I don't know why. I don't know what it was about it.
It's very traditional. Like, it is very Tekken. Like, MK11 is this massive, like, upgrade from MK10.
Well, tell me this. Because I dropped off at Tekken 5. That was the last one I put.
Tekken 6 is terrible, so that's good.
Is that true?
Yeah.
I put significant time into everyone up to Tekken 5, and then didn't play 6, and then dipped into 7, like I said. That was it.
Oh, no, 6 sucks. Tekken 5 is really solid. Tekken 5 Dark Resurrection, the PSP one, is what I lived on for a long time. 3 for me is always the king. And
yes.
I like the things that they tried to do in 4. They replaced every grapple with a stance switch. A person switch. So when you press two buttons together, you switch places with someone.
Yeah.
And it was all about placement and putting them through the environment. And it's kind of their response to like Dead or Alive. And then they sort of realized like, nah, we're Tekken. We should be Tekken.
Yeah.
And then Tekken 5 was Tekken AF. And then Tekken 6 is where the lore got stupid and they ruined Jin's character and whatever.
Oh, did they really?
Oh yeah, they made him like this insane war-hungry genocidal maniac.
Yeah,
and it was
he's like in charge of everything.
Yeah, he owns the Mishima Zaibatsu, and then he takes takes it over from Heihachi when he thinks that Heihachi's dead.
Yeah.
And then they do a whole thing where he just goes to war, and it's just like, what are you doing, Jin? Like, you're meant to be the best of us. And yeah, that stuff. And then he fights a giant Egyptian god called Azazel.
I love Tekken.
I love Tekken so much. You're going to talk about like Tekken lore, Mortal Kombat lore.
Yeah.
Like, they're the pillars of my life.
I love that. Like, just the kind of memories. I'm sure kids still do this now, but I remember like being a kid, early internet stuff, like only having access for a few hours a week and using that precious time to look up the biographies of Tekken characters and Mortal Kombat characters.
Tekken 3, that's the thing with Tekken. When I watch this anime thing, I've been with Tekken since day one. Like, I remember Tekken 1. Like, the first one I played was 2, but like, and then I went back and bought 1. Yeah, and then like just played them through. And Tekken 3 left an immortal mark on me. I love Tekken 3 so much. And then Tekken Tag was like, that's such an era. The soundtrack's brilliant, as I'm always sending you links to it. The school stage is so good. And Tekken, it's just, you know, it is one of those lifetime franchises.
100%, man. Like, Tekken 3 is so good that I was in Leeds at the weekend, and I was in a Pixel Bar, I think it's called, where there's like games, consoles.
And you played Kirby, and it was really good.
And I won't speak on what I thought of the first Kirby. I can't believe he finally played
it. And he hated it.
On the table next to me while I was there again.
If only it was in live action.
With my pirate. Fully it was. No, I don't want to see that freaking live action. I don't want it. That's criminal.
That would be kind of weird.
We're on a list. What was I going to... I was only going to say that I was on this table with Kirby.
Right.
And the table behind me were playing Tekken 3. Oh. We were having a good time. And I was ignoring my partner to turn around and watch this Tekken fight.
Is there...
I was like, that's great.
A better game that you find in a barcade than Tekken 3?
No.
Like, I don't think that's... I don't think it's a thing.
I'll raise you this.
Go on.
Is there a better game than Tekken 3?
Well, that's the thing, right? I mean, if we do genuine best games of all time, Tekken 3 is up there.
Yeah.
Like, it absolutely is. I mean, there's the whole argument about factoring in story and narrative and all the kind of things. If you're the best game of all time, I think it should encompass everything that games can be overall. But in terms of the most pristine thing that you can just give to someone, Tekken 3, isn't it?
Tekken 3.
To me, what's really weird, though, is that we played the UK one, which was in 50 frames a second.
Right.
The US, and I think most of the territories got 60, which is why when the PlayStation 1 Classic had Tekken 3 in it, and it was stuck on 50. A lot of Americans, a lot of other regions went, what the hell is this? Everything feels wrong. Whereas to me, I was like, this is brilliant. This is exactly what it felt like when I was a kid, playing it at 10 frames less. But yeah, Tekken, though, good stuff.
Good stuff.
Good stuff. I sat and watched an entire, me and my wife sat down and watched an entire recap of the entire Tekken lore.
Love
Not because I wanted to, you'd think I would. But I mean, I'm happy watching it. But my wife was like, I know bits and pieces about Tekken.
Mm-hmm.
Who's this Jin lad that I had a crush on when I was young? So we sat and watched all of the Tekken stuff. Which only reminded me how absolutely terrible Tekken 6 is. Which is to say that we had many other things to talk about, and we're now 15 minutes in.
I love that.
16.
For everyone listening at home, we were like, oh, is today's podcast going to be a little light? We don't know if there's anything going on. We collected all these news stories. 15 minutes have gone by.
It just flies by. I mean, the thing is, we rounded up a bunch of other news stories because there is other stuff to talk about, one of which being the GoldenEye Anniversary Remaster Remake, whatever it is. There was a whole bunch of stuff that leaked a couple of years ago about the remake of GoldenEye, the original being 007 GoldenEye on the N64, and that's been remade. It was remade across the 2000s, around about 2006, 2007. It was meant to come out, I think it would have been the 10th anniversary back then.
Right.
I think GoldenEye was 96, might have been 97. And they had the remake ready, and then for whatever reason, they couldn't make it work. There was a disagreement between Microsoft, Eon, whoever they're called, who own Bond, and it couldn't come out. So apparently that finished game has just sat there, waiting to be put out whenever they can make something work with Eon, who are apparently notorious for not being friendly with other people.
Yeah, apparently.
Even though there are a lot of Bond games that are, like, you know, stellar and everything. Point being that I've only just realized, as I said that Everything or Nothing is Eon. James Bond.
Yeah, it is.
Bond. I think that's them going like, well, we'll give you it, but you've got to remind them of us.
Well, funnily enough, though, that's the best one.
It is the best one.
Yeah.
That and Nightfire, right up there. Age Under Fire or Nightfire?
That was it. Oh, Nightfire.
Yeah?
Every day of the week.
I think I might go
Nostalgia Nightfire. Nostalgia speaking, though, I think.
Well, see, that's the Tony Hawk's 2 versus Tony Hawk's 3 thing. It's generational. I'm Tony Hawk's 2. I think you're Tony Hawk's 3.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because it's like a little age bit. If you're a little bit younger, you'd be THPS 2. Anyway, for GoldenEye, apparently that is coming in time for the 25th anniversary of GoldenEye the movie, which is going to be in August later this year. So people can finally get their hands on this remade version of what is to some people the best first-person shooter of all time.
I'll ask you this.
Go on.
I'll ask you this now. I've had some coffee.
Riddle me this.
I'm drinking it right now. I feel like I've had eight pints.
Flying.
I'll ask you this, Scott. Does GoldenEye even hold up in 2022? Because I don't think it does, man.
Well, the thing is, I do think it holds up, but in like a stylistic sense, I like the way that it feels, and it feels completely different to anything else on the market. In regards to it, has that the sense of aiming that Time Splitters has, which if you want to get a feel right now for how GoldenEye is going to feel to go back to, go play Time Splitters 1 or 2.
Okay,
they're on the Xbox. They finally put them out on backwards compatibility, because it's all about zooming into the frame and picking off a specific headshot rather than sweeping the cursor over everybody, or whatever, aiming down the sights or whatever. It is that Call of Duty would popularize, or Halo, like arena shooters would popularize, respectively. It's more about just this weird feel of like zooming in. There's a lot of auto aim going on. There's a lot of animation priority, like in GoldenEye especially, and especially because it wants to open on the dam level. It wants to make you feel like a god, like make you feel like Bond. Like you're pretty much just holding the trigger down. You don't really need to aim that well,
yeah.
And the game will do the rest of it for you. That like feel is what made it feel incredible when I went back to it a couple of years ago, when I finally got it a couple of years ago. I never played it as a kid. It was the music, it was the presentation. Like GoldenEye's soundtrack goes.
Yeah.
Like GoldenEye's main menu theme is the sickest thing anyone's ever written. Like, oh my God, it's so slick. Like you bring that back, you remaster it, and it has the same little like cool little beat that's in there. That's really cool. And that kind of track, that kind of goes into that first level and that whole, like that general feel of like, oh my God, I am Bond. I'm taking people out. I'm really, really cool.
Yeah.
I'm shooting the windows out. I'm like, you know, whatever. That stuff that very much holds up.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The reason I asked that question is because, like you mentioned there about the sort of slight generational differences, I didn't grow up on GoldenEye. Like, that wasn't my first person, shooter.
I was always playing it at a friend's house.
I see. None of my mates had it, again, because I was slightly younger. You know, we were playing other things. By the time we got into first-person shooters and Bond, it was Nightfire. It was stuff like that. Like, that's what we were playing competitively. So I'm kind of at an age where I just missed it. So I don't have that nostalgic reverence for it, which always makes me wonder. You know, I played around your house. We went around your house once.
Oh, yeah. That was my 30th.
Yes, we did 30th birthday. Yes, we were playing some GoldenEye around then. It was very fun.
Uh-huh.
But would I be interested in a remaster? I'm not sure.
I'm interested whether, like, just what they do to the controls and the feel, because they did remake GoldenEye on the Wii, and so they had to go back and change stuff there, and that was when they replaced Pierce Brosnan with Daniel Craig and everything, and they did change the feel of it. It didn't have that Free Radical Time Splitters, what would go on to be the Time Splitters feel, which is the thing that makes it GoldenEye. So it is interesting, because they have to walk a line between people's muscle memory and then making it work for a whole new generation, but it's a generation who aren't going to care anyway, because they weren't brought up on GoldenEye. It's only going to work for people like me or you, who have the reference point for either the movie or the game.
It's... slightly different conversation, but I've noticed more and more as we start, you know, we'll continue to do lists on the main War Culture Gaming channel, but yes. I'm like, some of our reference points now are so out, like talking about Tekken earlier, talking about GoldenEye now, like, do younger people, you know, age 13, 14, or whatever, care about that stuff at all?
I know.
I don't know.
Well, I have this when I'm whenever I'm talking about Metal Gear Solid, because I'm just like, if you, you know, if you were born after 2000, then you're coming into your teen years for Metal Gear Solid 5, and there's, if your first Metal Gear was Metal Gear 5, none of it's going to make any sense. And we talked about in the last wind-up, I think the overall storytelling and multi-part, as a lore, in multi-part installments has gone away anyway. Like a Metal Gear or a Mass Effect or whatever, like that size storytelling just isn't a thing anymore. It's why the Mass Effect Legendary Edition felt so fresh, retrospectively. Yeah, I don't know. I think that too, because usually I'll write stuff and then realize that all my reference points are the 2000s.
Yeah.
And I'm like, some people listening to this might not even have been here then. So there is that. But I mean, in our specific case, you go on YouTube stats, you can see that our average age is like 30 plus.
Okay.
So like there's that thing.
Makes me feel a bit better.
But yeah, same. But like it is that question of like, if I was coming up now, the amount of things that are fundamentally, and this I'm talking about all entertainment, fundamentally reliant on touchstones from 20 years ago. So many franchises being resurrected, Jurassic Park, the new one, it's like, hey, do you care? We got all the old people back in. Like, if I was a kid, I'd be like, I don't care about any of these literal dinosaur IP. Like, where's my stuff? Like, to them, their stuff is like Fortnite and like whatever. Like, there's just so few new franchises.
Even Fortnite's old now. Yeah. Even that's like...
Yeah, 5 years old.
You know what I mean? I think that's why, like, a lot of studios, especially in the movie space, you know, have taken the legacy sequel approach where it's like, we'll focus on new things, we'll resurrect the IP, we'll focus on a new cast, but you have the old cast coming in for cameos or supporting roles, and then we can get the nostalgia card there. They're trying to appeal to everyone.
You know,
revive it. Put it in front of people's faces, but also get people back who want to continue.
Imagine if you were like 12 in 2013, and then you went through like all of like most of your formative years, all the high school stuff, and then you maybe like left after sort of like 8-9 years, and you got a job. GTA 5 has been with you the entire time.
That's nuts.
That would really drive home how much Rockstar have milked that installment.
Yeah,
like compared to what we did, where we had a different GTA for every year of school.
Yeah,
or every like year of our lives for the most part. Like when I got my first proper job, GTA 4 popped out.
Yeah,
and it was
first
like paid job. Anyway, I was doing other stuff before then, but things like that. I wonder about that stuff too. We do a podcast on that stuff.
We could.
What are the? I'll do a Twitter poll. What are the gaming kids actually care about? Because I remember Rich Evans on Red Letter Media said, you know, it feels like all the kids just want to play with the toys, but you got to play with granddad's toys, and it's sort of like, you can't do that. Put that away. You've got to use this. You've got to play with this because you've got to do what we're playing with.
Well, that's a good point because we're also a generation of big kids. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We're a generation of big kids who haven't let go of our toys and want to impart not literally in some cases, but want to impart our likes and interests from our childhood onto the kids as well. So I wonder whether it just becomes this kind of like cycle of, you know, obviously new stuff still coming through, but.
Nowhere near on the same scale as the bankable stuff. Like, I feel like with access to great... I mean, my personal theory on this stuff is that because a lot of the bigger studios, whether it's film studios, game publishers or whatever, have so much access to data that they can just point and go, well, that's a safe bet. We should do one more of them. And as we're obviously seeing, especially in the gaming space, most of those things crash and burn.
Yeah.
But like at the same time, I think that's why those things are happening, because there's just so much access to that data. And if you're the number cruncher, you just look at that and go, well, that's what we should do.
We've sounded so old on these podcasts over the past few weeks. Like, so old. Unbelievably old.
I mean,
not even that old, really.
No. I mean,
keep telling myself.
Hopefully, it's relatably old, or it's a relatable perspective. It's experience. It's wisdom. It's living this gaming life in a recordable sense for the last 9 odd years that we've been doing this. So, in other words, speaking of gaming things, we talked about GoldenEye about 10 years ago. GoldenEye, hopefully, coming out later this year, and we'll see whether that lands or not. Now, the next point I've got down is GTA 5. Now, I've written an expletive next to its name because I got the GTA 5. It's not expanded. That are enhanced. It's just GTA 5. I got GTA 5 again on the PS5 because I was like, I'll see what this is about. Kotaku said it felt like a whole new game.
Interesting.
It's not a whole new game, Josh Brown.
Interesting.
No, it's not. Yeah. And so I was like, I'll get this and I'll play for a bit and I'll see what I think. Now, I've dipped back into GTA 5 a few times over the years. I think GTA 5 has aged like hell. Like, right. I think the sense of momentum, the gunplay, the actual just act of moving your character feels horrible in that game. And I feel like back in 2013, on the cusp of the indie movement and on the cusp of all these different budgetary production things changing around what games could be. And we like this whole big opulent, oh my God, it feels like you're piloting, you're moving a person through this space. Now it feels like hell.
Right.
And it's like in Red Dead 2, it kind of factored into the overall like sludgy Western, you know, the death of the West. Like it kind of became part of it, this like laden sort of feel to it, like exploring a cupboard one tin can at a time or something. In GTA 5, I just want to turn around on the spot and shoot someone. Like it's a GTA game. Like, and so some of these things obviously were there at the time, but I think it's aged badly. And I think that the more they sort of keep trying to shine more lights on it, like over and over again, and try and like enhance the textures or whatever they do to try and get you back in, for me, it just shows how badly it's aged. Like that game's pacing is horrendous. All the towing the cars and the shipping containers and like all these weird like SNL adjacent skit stuff that just barely kind of works. Like I get in the way of the game. Yeah, me going back to it, I was like, this is bad.
I'm excited to get back in because I like GTA 5 way more than you. And I think I have a lot more patience for that kind of methodical, stodgy gameplay than you do. You know, yes. I think
it's in live action. So it's,
yeah. I'm almost certain it has aged poorly, but I remember coming out of Max Payne 3 and thinking like, I want every game to feel like Max Payne 3
is what got it right. Where yeah. And same like Red Dead 2, it has to thematically make sense, or at least it can be thematically made sense to justify why it's like that.
Right.
Max Payne 3 was like this big, like alcoholic retired bodyguard who's like throwing his weight literally into every dive and you could really feel it. That's when I loved it.
I know you're going to say it was better in the olden games, but in GTA 5, like the heaviness to like the physics was some of the biggest points of hilarity for me. Plunking a guy in the back of the head and watching him like slap against the pavement, or like you jumping into a car and like hearing like the, you know, like the big hit of hitting the bonnet, you know, going over the top. Like to me, that kind of heaviness in the physics always led to a lot of comedy, especially in the online space, you know, when you're hitting your friends and they can't get up or whatever. I haven't played it properly since 2018. You know, I was into the online for a long time, but then just kind of dropped off. So I'm going to go back to it eventually once I have my gaming break.
It's like, it's an interesting thing now because we're coming up on a decade since it launched. And I think that like, it's weird because you sort of play through it and like, you know, you notice a lot of more mature thematics that were in there. And like, you know, there's a reason to go check it out. It is the most popular game of all time. But at the same time, raw gameplay, like I said, like you just said, I wasn't that big of a fan of it in the first place. But the negatives of it have only, they've become new negatives. The gameplay, the thing that I could accept beforehand, is now the reason that I don't want to play it.
Right.
And the thematics, I couldn't get away with Trevor the first time I went through it. I was, oh, he's just too insane and nihilistic and I don't want to be this guy. And those are the things that I can kind of laugh at and have fun with now. But just the literal act of playing it, it feels like this stodgy thing that just isn't fun.
It's funny, man. Like, is GTA Online the only live service game that isn't an MMO that actually lived up to the 10-year plan gimmick? And it didn't even intentionally set out to it. But, you know, we had Anthem, we had Destiny 1. We had all of these games that were like, you're going to be playing this for the next 10 years. And obviously that didn't happen. Mm. But funnily enough, with GTA Online, which kind of hobbled out its online component, like that's the one that survived a full 10 years.
And the first few weeks sort of were buggy as hell, too. Like, they were terrible. I played GTA 4 online and the GTA PSP games with my friends on local when I was in high school, because a handful of us had PSPs. GTA Online, as it's branded from GTA 5 onwards, I played that at launch. It was horrible and I never played it again.
Mm.
But I know that, like, you played loads of it, and it's the thing that's sustaining GTA 5.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously it got better, but like, if you just had that first impression, I don't blame you for just thinking no, because it was hobbled out, man. It was buggy. It would barely get you in a server. Like, the load times were bad.
Mm-hmm.
It had such a bad start, and now it's this 10-year behemoth.
Another thing as well for why I think GTA 5 has aged horribly is the and again, like, some people levied this stuff at it at the time. It's just so scripted. Like, going back to the Definitive Edition was always what I always thought about GTA. It was better when it was a sandbox. It was better when they give you vague mission goals. I know we talked about this loads when the Definitive Edition dropped. But GTA 5 is like, you better be walking at this exact speed behind this exact character holding this exact weapon, or we're going to fail you out of it.
Yeah.
Because if you think of any other way of completing that mission, you're just done. And you're like, no, do it again, do it again, do it again. And I just hate that, like, in contrast to how freeing those old games were. And it was always fascinating listening to the houses, especially Dan Houser, say that they made them freeform because they couldn't do the other thing. And then the more that they were able to do, like, you know, more Hollywood production values or whatever, the more they could railroad you and the more they could make it more filmic. But that inherently tightened everything. And for my opinion, made it infinitely worse.
It's I'm again in classic wind up fashion on the other side of this because right. while I always played the Grand Theft Auto games, you know, played 3 in Vice City, especially to death. It was never my franchise. It was never the thing that I was booting up games to play. Like for me, I was more interested in Metal Gear Solid or Resident Evil or whatever. And it was only when 5 came around, I quite liked 4, but I dropped off that and kind of joined the backlash bandwagon at the time, which I was younger to be fair. But I kind of like. Really bought into the criticisms leveled at that game after the fact, but GTA 5 was the one where
it all worked
like narratively, the open world, the online, played it for hundreds of hours, and I just kind of, weirdly enough, even though I was, you know, older at that point, I was thinking like this was my GTA, which is so strange considering how many times I'd played it before and enjoyed it before, but it didn't click in totality until 5, when I know a lot of people like you were kind of thinking, oh, it's past its prime, the better games were before.
It's interesting because I that's the thing, you talk about the generational stuff you mentioned before. I wonder how many people, how many age groups, their GTA is GTA 5. Because to me and anyone who played it, who was born in the very late 80s, early 90s, it's going to be that original trilogy. If they didn't, you know, maybe the original 2D ones and then the first 3D trilogy. Because that was the thing. I remember when you played, I think you went back to all 3 of them in the definitive edition and you were just like, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
Like some of that was because it was buggy as hell, but then some of it is just those old mission designs are like freeform to a fault, or they're just messy, or they're like, they feel amateurish because they're trying to push different things that weren't refined enough yet.
Yeah, 100%. Like going back to it, I thought I would get more enjoyment out of it, even outside of the bugs and whatever. But yeah, I got halfway through GTA 3 and I just thought, I'd left this in the past for a reason. I thought there was a reason that I only ever did the open world anarchy stuff. There was a reason I never actually got quite far in the missions because I just, for me, it was open to a fault. Yep. I don't need my hand held, but I just kind of got more enjoyment out of the scripted stuff.
Some of the stuff as well.
Red Dead or whatever.
Yeah, some of the stuff as well is that the mission trigger is just like 6 vans are going to come for you. The AI just tells them to ride into you over and over again.
Yeah.
Keep resetting until you walk the right way to get away from them. And it's weird because that mission design, that approach to it is what GTA Online is, because it has to be, because it has to be freeform enough for a bunch of people to do those mission types. But ironically, that's not why I don't care about GTA Online. Like I need a bit of the backbone. Like I need a bit of a, whether it's stylistically, artistically, whatever, like those different time periods, the characters, I need something else there. Next news item is the idea of Remedy doing a Doctor Strange game. Now this is in very early hands in regards to it being circulating online, but we can just talk about the potential of it. Because I don't want this at all. I don't want Remedy, one of the strongest original IP producing studios, doing anything close to something that's bankable.
Oh, I do. I do, just because.
You like Control?
I do. I'll tell you why.
I'll tell you why.
I love Control.
You do?
I love Alan Wake. I love Max Payne, even though they obviously don't
Crossfire X can't get enough. Anymore.
I did not play Crossfire X, but I will do one day. I think, you know, those are going to continue. There's no way Remedy stops making their original games. We already know Alan Wake 2 is coming. We already know they're working on a follow-up to Control. So if they throw in a licensed product alongside that, I'm all for it. I would love to see their take on Doctor Strange specifically. I think they have the tool set to create something fascinating with his power set, you know, a more magic projectile kind of focus to the gameplay. You know, obviously you got flying, which was done so well in Control. I just think like their tool set is really equipped to tackle a character like that.
In classic me fashion, I'm going to do a live 180 because I'm remembering the ashtray maze from Control.
Yeah, you are.
And I'm thinking that if you were in control of that.
That's great, that.
Like the idea of like a whole level warping around you, all the different geometric shapes that are used in that level. Arguably, the ashtray maze in Control is a Doctor Strange level.
It is.
If you're going to do a Doctor Strange game, it's that.
Oh, yeah. I didn't think about that. But you're right. If you just like, imagine that taking place in like, you know, the Manhattan area where like the sky's coming in on itself. You're going to that alternate dimension. I just watched Spider-Man No Way Home again last night. So I'm very hyped for more Doctor Strange stuff. I can see that working, man.
So I wonder how much because the thing is, like, obviously Doctor Strange, obviously a comic book character, and there's tons of really recognizable artwork from like the 60s and the old school stuff that was really just over the top. Like it was in a really like memorable way. Excuse me. Once it came to live action, they had to start doing the like it's kind of become a thing where that sort of kaleidoscopic approach is Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
And that's how he gets represented in multiple different films now. And obviously we're talking about the MCU stuff, but I wonder how much they carry that over. It's like how much of that it just is the way that his magic is represented, because that's how you do it. Like, you need a way for him to bend reality itself and punch through and make holes in different dimensions and bring different things in.
Dude,
I wonder how they do that.
Well, just think about like the potential for including the portals in gameplay would be. I mean, we've already got Portal itself showing how cool it is to,
I thought you were going to say Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart.
I mean, it was all right. It was all right, wasn't it? It was okay.
5 stars I gave it. I liked
stars,
it a lot.
I suppose.
I liked it a lot. They could have done a lot more with the Portal stuff,
but
though.
Even in Ratchet and Clank, you know, you're using the SSD of the PlayStation 5 to zip from level to level, you know, more or less simultaneously.
Yeah.
That being brought over to a Doctor Strange game, maybe with more freeform use of the portals, maybe use it in combat. You know, I want to punch a guy through a portal here and have him fall from the ceiling. Like, stuff like that would be sick.
I want to open a portal behind the guy and punch to my side, and the fist comes out behind him and hits him anyway.
Yes,
I want to do that.
And who better to do that than Remedy Entertainment, Scott Tilford?
You're not wrong. The thing is, I just the value for me in Remedy is that they have full creative freedom. That was why they took that insane investment. I think it was from Tencent. They took some massive amount of money, and it was from some other investor who gave them a massive like blank check ostensibly, and I was like, in the moment I was like, cool, I wonder what they're going to do, because their track record from Max Payne to Alan Wake, obviously there's Quantum Breaks in there too, but whatever, gameplay was really good, and then obviously Control, I was like, I love what they do. Like, I didn't like the end of Control. I didn't like how much they left up to the DLC, whatever. I thought it completely dropped the ball at the end, but everything until then was immaculate. And so it was that whole thing of like, I love the worlds that they make, and they're building this Remedy shared universe, like with the DLC for Control, that, you know, they bring Alan Wake in and everything. And it's just, it's such an interesting like pivot to be like, you know, because we talked about like bankable IP and, you know, like new stuff, and the reliance on bankability and the reliance on safe bets. This is a safe bet from a studio that have made their name on not doing safe bets. Like, Crossfire X was a really safe bet in theory. Like, that game had massive success overseas. It should have made sense to just bolt a really basic campaign onto it and sell it over here. Obviously, it tanked, but like, that's a safer bet. And I don't want them being safe.
I know what you mean, but I also want to see them get it like a big, big break. Mm. Like, Remedy, for a little while, it kind of looked like they were maybe in trouble, you know, when Quantum Break came out, like you said. And then they had Control, which sold well eventually, but didn't get off to a good start.
Yeah,
initially,
weirdly,
you know, it had legs and had a lot of word of mouth, but initially it was kind of like, oh, what's going on with this studio? Now, with the announcement of Alan Wake 2 and that, the success of Control, I know they're in a safer space, but I would love to see them just make a proper mainstream hit in the same way that almost Sucker Punch got the opportunity to do. And I know the Infamous series that they made, you know, did well, but I feel like Ghost of Tsushima elevated them to a new level, right?
That's true.
In the same way sort of Guerrilla Games was with Horizon. I would love to see Remedy kind of get the opportunity to take that leap in maybe a bankable franchise style like Doctor Strange is how they do it.
Those things, Guerrilla stuff or Sucker Punch stuff, that's they're bolstered by being exclusives. Like, I think if it was... Because obviously Quantum Break was everywhere, and like it was, but that was one of the first Xbox One exclusives. That was that game single-handedly spearheaded the whole TV meets games thing that they were doing, and obviously... As that fell apart, the game fell apart. But yeah, Remedy haven't been like massive top tier things since Max Payne 1, I would say. Well, Max Payne 1 and 2. Even Max Payne 3 went to Rockstar, and then that bombed, and it's just like the IP itself couldn't sustain, whatever. But yeah, overall, if this stuff is true, at least they do have precedent. There is the likes of the Astro Maze in Control, which you can go Google to get an idea of how they might do level bendy stuff in a good way.
100%. And my only kind of caveat to it is that I don't want them to just become the Doctor Strange studio. Like, if they're going to make it, I want it to be alongside their original IP, because that is too valuable to get rid of, like exactly what you said. But if it's something they can make alongside their own original properties, I'm all for it.
Because it is interesting to round it off in terms of the MCU, the amount of MCU projects that are in the works, and the idea of taking veteran studios known for a specific thing or a specific ideology and then bolting the MCU onto them. Like, Fire Access are doing the Midnight Suns game, which is Fire Access are the XCOM people, and they're doing that like, you know, a few years after the guy that invented XCOM went off to do Phoenix Point, because he's like, I'm not sticking around anymore, I'm gonna go and do my version of XCOM over here, because that's what I do. And it's like, that's an interesting thing that like Fire Access are doing this Midnight Suns game, which is the Marvel game anyway. And at the same time, Remedy are going to be doing this, but potentially going to be doing this thing. So it's interesting. Like, I feel like gaming's having this weird, like, reverberative, like, wave that came after the MCU. Like, MCU feels done, like, movie-wise. I know that it'll keep going, but it feels done. The end game was an ending, and we're done. Like, you gotta put the more coal in the fire to keep that thing going again.
I simply can't get into this in the last 2 minutes of this
No, podcast. I know you can't. That's fine. It's probably, that's why I'm saying it now.
I know. You're outrageous, but No Way Home made so much money. Almost $2 billion, Scott.
That's barely the MCU. That's barely the MCU. That's Sony brand synergy, the movie. That's Sony going, hey, think of Spider-Man because we have a lot of Spider-Man stuff to come. Hey, by the way, Morbius is coming.
Go nuts there, kid.
No. I'll do a Twitter poll about it. I'll do a whole thing on how that movie is barely an MCU movie. That's a Sony brand campaign movie. That's what that is. But that's a whole thing for the future. For now, it's been the wind-up. I've been Scott Taylor, joined by Josh Brown.
Always a pleasure, Scott.
Always a pleasure to be heard by all of you. And we'll catch you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.